Pam, pam, pam.
מה זה הדבר הפסיכי הזה, ידענו? פשוט נופל עלינו טילים. נופל עלינו טילים. פשוט נופל עלינו טילים.
Oh God. Okay, guys, we gotta get off the roof. These are coming down right next to us here. They're coming down. One just about... We gotta go inside.
What are we doing, guys?
No.
Yeah?
No.
Just enjoying what?
Here for picnic.
Picnic?
Yeah.
Where's your picnic stuff, guys?
In the car.
In the car.
Yeah.
Right. You're here for a picnic?
Yeah.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah.
You know what you're doing. I'm looking at you. The guy with the camera? Yeah, you right there. Yeah, can I see the videos?
Yeah.
Show me the videos. No, I'm serious. Are you deleting them right now? Is that what you're doing, guys?
This is private. Why? What do you think you would
work? You know exactly what you're doing. You're creeping all the girls here.
No,
I watched you guys. I watched this guy. I watched him watching my daughters with his camera.
Okay, sorry.
No.
Okay.
You don't come to a beach and videotape the girls. You know exactly. You can delete them all you want, but I got you guys on film now. Okay?
Sorry, this is...
No.
I've become friends with school shooters. I've seen it. Look, the NRA, I was an NRA guy for a long time. They used to...
What do you think your strongest moment was tonight?
Oh, just, I think it was a good debate. Well, we got to see a contrast. And I think the ending sums it up. The democracy issue is important.
Governor, you said you become friends with school shooters during the debate. Can you clarify what you meant on that?
Can you clarify what you meant when you said you'd be friends with school shooters?
He is being treated not just as a former president, but almost as though he is a sitting president. As Boris, you just noted, getting a briefing from FEMA, getting a briefing from the National Guard. That is not something that is typically just offered to a candidate. They are treating him as though he is a former president who is there to help. And one thing that I had noticed earlier during our 1 p.m. conversation was that Donald Trump did not have that much to offer in terms of resources since he is not a sitting president. But I will note that he, and the campaign, say that they have arrived in that area with trucks full of supplies that they plan on giving out. So there is something there for them to offer. He also said that he had a tanker truck full of gasoline, which obviously, if you've ever covered one of these storms, you understand that one of the first things and hardest things to come by is gasoline. So he said that he was going to be giving that out. He is clearly taking this seriously as a politician is on the ground trying to show that he is there in support of the people on the ground in Georgia.
All right, we got to think about getting out of here because this is going to be... James, you all right, bud?
I know.
One more time. How much a gallon? That's all I want to hear.
What's up, man?
Why are you taking a video?
How much is it a gallon? You work here?
He's taking a video.
How much is it a gallon? That's all we want to know. You're filling gas, right? How much a gallon?
$10.
$10 a gallon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Video me, okay?
That's
everybody left. After extorting hurricane victims with $10 gas, they closed up. We sent the packies packing.
This is our road.
Yeah.
Or was our road. It's the only way out.
Zoom into that tree in the road.
This is... Wait, hold on. They built a road over a river, and the river won.
Yep.
Hurricane Helene, 2024. We are now landlocked on this mountain. Supposedly there was lots of mudslides up top, and they're locked in with a couple barriers, and this is what the end of our road looks like. We need a bridge, and we need lines fixed. There's a lot of lines down, so we're...
This flooding in North Carolina does not sit well with me. I think something's going on, so I decided to do some digging. So the first thing I find out is North Carolina has the richest deposits of lithium in the entire world. Yeah, lithium for like cars, batteries, all that. Then I find out they have the world's highest purity quartz deposits. And that quartz just so happens to be the world's supply for AI chips, microchips, and all kinds of stuff. We're talking a $530 billion industry. So this is where it gets interesting. So a company by the name of Piedmont Lithium is awaiting a state mining permit for a site in northern Gaston County. And Gaston County is completely flooded right now. The project was awaiting zoning approval because they were getting backlash from the residents and also city officials. And this lithium mine they want would be the third largest producer of lithium in the world. And they made a deal with Tesla already. Now remember the quartz? So in Spruce Pine, North Carolina, right next to Ashland, they are wanting to expand their mines even larger. And the residents aren't having it either. Enter the floods. People, these are mountain towns. It rarely, if not ever, floods in the mountains. I would know, I grew up in the mountains in Colorado, which means none of these people have flood insurance. I mean, the media is saying biblical devastation in North Carolina, AKA like the worst thing that could happen, and you're not coming back from it. Read between the lines, people. Everything happens for a reason.
I'll tell you what I find suspicious as shit, that one of the areas affected by Hurricane Helene is the world's largest lithium deposit, and the DOD just entered into an agreement with this company right here to mine lithium for electric cars starting in 2025. Now that area is completely devastated. This is a $90 million agreement between the DOD and this company right here to get Kings Mountain, North Carolina lithium mine up and running by 2030. If that area has been inundated, is in a disaster zone, then the government can come in and do eminent domain and they can pay you what it was worth 5 years ago rather than what it's worth right now. Imagine that your home has turned into a watery lot and the government comes to you and says, hey, I'll pay you what you paid for it. You're gonna take it and you're gonna go, right? What do you think's gonna happen right here now that they want this lithium mine up and running by 2025, 2030 at the latest? Back in 1947, we had the Florida-Georgia hurricane, or Hurricane 9, and it was the first hurricane to be targeted for weather modification. What happened was General Electric, the US Navy, the Army, the Air Force, they poured dry ice into this hurricane using airplanes to see what would happen. Would they slow it down? Well, what happened was it slowed down a little bit, but it turned west really sharp. Let me show you. This is the path that the hurricane took in 1947. Does it look similar to you? Probably not. It's a coincidence, right? Moving on. I'm sure this is just another coincidence, but do you know who owns the most shares in that lithium mine? BlackRock and Vanguard.
Folks, Jeremy Harrell, LFA TV here. Look, quick update on the disaster in our southeast region right now. Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, North Carolina, that entire region affected by the floods, the hurricane, the disasters, the complete wiping out of towns. Well, earlier today I reported on my show Live from America that both Joe Biden and Kamala Harris really do not care about what's going on down there. And that's not coming from me. Joe Biden says that there are no more resources to send to the flood victims. No more resources. We're sending billions and billions of dollars to Ukraine and Israel and every other place in the world, but no more resources to send to fellow Americans who pay taxes and who live right here on our own soil. We even heard him later on say that they're doing all they can do. He was on the phone for 2 hours this weekend, for crying out loud. Now we're figuring out that FEMA truckers reporting that the agency is not sending any aid to the disaster areas. This is absolutely huge. And I'm reading it right here. Logistics companies and truckers registered with FEMA are always on the front line of disasters, delivering food, water, and other aid to impacted communities. Brokers put thousands of truckers on notice to be ready when Hurricane Helene hit. But as of September 30th, FEMA isn't posting any available loads, according to multiple brokers and truckers. These truckers and these companies are saying, we're not getting any word. We're not even getting any kind of logistics or any kind of plans or any scheduling to deliver any disaster relief. And this coming on the heels of Joe Biden saying there's no more resources to give. We're tapped out. I wonder why. Couple that together with this port strike that's going to happen at 12:01 tonight, or I should say a.m. tomorrow morning, and we're in for a world of hurt. But this is what happens when you have like people like Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, when you have residents of the United States like Joe Biden, and fake non-democratically elected vice presidential candidate of the Democratic Party, Kamala Harris. Everything the Democrats touch turned to you-know-what. So there you go, folks. The truckers are now saying, we're not getting any logistics, any scheduling, any orders, anything. It looks like we're going to have to come together as the American people and help everybody out, because our federal government is too busy invading America and paying for all of that to happen. Really despicable and really disgusting. Folks, follow us, LFA TV, on Rumble at rumble.com/LFATV, and follow us on X at LFATVUS. Buckle up, folks.
It's tragic. Matter of fact, we're trying to get the exact number. My FEMA advisor is on the ground in Florida right now. There's a distinction between the numbers that FEMA's used and the ones that are used by the locals. So it really is amazing. You saw the photographs. It's stunning.
It's unbelievable. It really is. Such a wide area.
And we've given them all everything that we have. We're on the ground ahead of time. So we're working hard.
Any more resources the federal government could be giving them?
No, we've given them, we have pre-planned a significant amount of it, even though they didn't ask for it yet. Hadn't asked for it yet.
And the hurricane, Mr. President, why weren't you and Vice President Harris here in Washington commanding this weekend?
I was commanding. I was on the phone for at least 2 hours yesterday and the day before as well. I command, call a telephone, and all my security people.
Is it not important for the country to see?
Hey everyone, thank you very much for watching. If you want to watch more, or maybe even catch an entire episode of Live from America, all you have to do is watch us daily at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on rumble.com/LFATV. See you there.
I want to share with y'all some things you may not know about what's happening in the North Carolina mountains in the aftermath of Helene. Here's number one. If you have friends or family that are headed into the mountains or who live there, the looting has picked up major steam. I was advised yesterday by a county sheriff to make sure that anybody out and about is carrying. And in his words, carrying with the safety off. There are very aggressive people out there. And I'm just going to go ahead and say this. It's not because they're necessarily awful. They're desperate. Desperate people do desperate things, y'all. And why are they desperate? Because there's no water in some of these communities. We have neighbors in North Carolina with no water. And all I can say is this, the government ain't coming to save you. Not now, not ever, because they don't care about you, the people, anymore. It is the citizens who are gonna have to step it up. Now, I gotta tell y'all, I was floored yesterday by how my community, which is a little over an hour away from the affected areas, showed up at donation sites with water and diapers and formula and some liquid IV. I mean, y'all brought all kind of things, bleach, vinegar, You are ready to help, and we're going to take more donations today, and we're so grateful for everything because I'm going to get it into the hands of actual volunteers. And I was asking people, like, why are you bringing it to me? Some of y'all don't even know me. And they said, well, we don't trust the relief organizations anymore. Y'all, we have lost our organizations to grifters. We have lost our organizations to liars. And so we have to rely on each other because that's how this country was built. This country was built patriot by patriot. And I can tell you this, as a realtor, I know my realtors in the mountains, and I have talked to them, and they know the neighbors too. So I am getting your donations into hands that are going to get it into hands. And everybody that sent me dollars, I got teams of shoppers out, and I got receipts to prove it, because we are not grifters. We are neighbors. And the patriots that are in the mountains, if you see this, if your family sees this, hear me now. You are not forgotten by the rest of North Carolina. And if you are not in North Carolina, then there are ways that you can give. But can I just remind y'all of something? You cannot eat money. You cannot drink money. So for those of y'all that thought money was your God, and by the way, that includes our freaking elected officials, it's not your God. Told my girlfriend this morning while we were talking about this during our run, I said, tell your children, she's got grown children, this is why you keep a stash of water on hand. This is why you keep a stash of food on hand. But for those of y'all that are not in affected areas, if you can take your donated items and send it to the mountains, then send it with a friend. Make sure you're sending truckloads so that we don't overload the roads because our first responders are overwhelmed. By the way, thank you, Governor DeSantis, for doing more for North Carolina than North Carolina's governor has. I'm very grateful for your National Guard because we have to help each other, y'all. And I'm going to tell you something. If you will share this with somebody who doesn't know what's happening in North Carolina, they need to know. They need to know that there are entire towns gone. Chimney Rock is gone. A beautiful town. Swannanoa, gone. Montreat, gone. Other towns damaged beyond repair. That means our geography has changed. Our culture is at risk. But most importantly, our people, our generational people have lost their generational homes. This ain't about your granite countertops anymore. Listen, y'all, listen. Tell somebody how they can help. I am but one resource. There are people I know all over North and South Carolina that have been gathering up goods and trucks. Somebody as far away as Massachusetts putting a truck together. Let me know. I can connect you to where to take things. The Baptists are doing a great job out of Boone. Samaritan's Purse is on the ground. I trust those two organizations. I wish I had trust for more because I don't trust this government, but I trust the people of North Carolina. Y'all, the biggest thing you can do, pray. Pray right now. Pray fervently that people will turn their hearts back to God. And pray for a hedge of protection around all those who have seen things they should never have to see. I'll tell you one more story before I hang up this video. I had a lady come to my donation site yesterday, and her grandson is 10 years old, living in the mountains with his mother, who works in a VA hospital. They're getting the kid out today to get him home because they can finally get him out. And they're worried because he has seen things he should never have to see. When you have children that are seeing bodies on the ground and towns gone, we're going to have to answer for that one day, y'all. Please pray. Please do something. And for those of y'all that have already done something, I can't thank you enough.
Hey, everybody. This is Sherry here, and I'm at the Statesville Airport, and I wanted to show you what's happening right now. So here we are. These are the piles. Thank you to for everybody that is giving donations and coming out here giving of your time. Our house in Cheryl's Ford is a drop-off, so there's no amount too small or too big. You can also Venmo my husband, and we will buy supplies, as we're doing that already with anybody who drops off cash. So just wanted to let everybody see what we have going here. It's amazing. He's about to take off. Some of these planes are on their second trip of the morning, and donations are actually really starting to pour in. So it's so excited. They're taking these to the little mountain communities where there's no access by cars, by automobiles, to take water, baby food, diapers, adult diapers. I mean, everything. There's so many people that are stranded right now. So if you all, anybody can come out to volunteer, you can bring your items from 8 to 4 every day here at the Statesville Airport, hangar number 3. Or you can drop anything off at my house in Cheryl's Ford. You can go check my wall for the address. And we've already set up a drop-off site at our barn, and you're welcome to take items there too. So it's amazing. It's amazing to see our community come together like it is. So we just really encourage people, share, do what you can. We can't We can't do everything, but we can do something. So thank you guys again, and just keep it coming. This is an ongoing effort.
So I just got back from Asheville. I was covering Hurricane Helene there from before, during, to after the storm. The situation is extremely dire there. One of the huge challenges is that Asheville is in the dark. There's no way to communicate with people. There's spotty Wi-Fi, but a lot of people don't even know if their loved ones are okay. One thing that I found extremely helpful, and this is for people who don't have Wi-Fi, cell service, anything, is that you can turn your iPhone into a satellite phone. But first and foremost, you need to download the iPhone iOS 18 update. There's also a way to do this on the Google Pixel 9S. What you have to do is swipe down on the top right and go to the settings. This will only work if you have no Wi-Fi or cell service. So in order to test this, you have to turn off Wi-Fi, turn off cellular data, turn off everything. And then you go to the bottom, you'll go to the satellite, click on the demo so you can try it. If you're outside in an open space with a clear shot to the sky, position your phone to a satellite and try to get the connection. Once you get that connection, boom, you can send a text. But in order to receive a text, you also need to be connected to the satellite. I hope this is helpful for anyone, either right now or just do this in prep, because you never know.
Back to the mountains, where remarkable stories of survival are now being shared days after Helene wreaked havoc in North Carolina. But one Pageland man's efforts to help are now the source of controversy. He flew his own chopper on his own dime to help stranded victims. But that man says he abandoned his rescue missions after a fire official threatened to have him thrown in jail. Well, that man now wants answers and turned to Queen City News Chief Investigator Jody Barr to help figure out what went wrong here.
This is the original post that I was reading when I decided to go up and help. It's a long post, but she's saying that her kids and family and animals are trapped. No way out, no supplies, and the only way in or out is accessible by helicopter. Limited cell service and no water since Friday morning. I thought I have a helicopter and maybe I can help.
Jordan Sidham piled food and water into his helicopter Saturday and headed up toward Banner Elk. The only way through, a mountain gap in Lake Lure.
This is the mountain valley that you would have to fly to get to Black Mountain, where we were escorting people out. This is a mountain range, and this is a mountain range. The only place to fly through with bad visibility, low cloud coverage, is Lake Lure.
The cries for help from people stranded without food, water, or electricity hit social media soon after the flooding last Friday.
But my parents are stuck there. Their address is Banner Elk. They are in the first condo. If you receive this, please give me a call back. Thank you.
Sidham's phone started lighting up on Saturday with people begging for help.
I mean, I could hear the desperation in her voice. This is multiple phone calls I've received like this, voicemails, text messages, and you could hear people desperate for help.
Sidham and his son rescued four people on Saturday and spent the night in a nearby pilot's lounge, then decided to fly again Sunday morning.
I spoke with my son, which is my co-pilot. I said, hey, do you want to go back out and try to help today? And his response was, there's so many messages, I don't think we can't not go help.
Sidham and his son were headed up to Black Mountain. Flight tracking shows no flight restrictions in place Saturday or Sunday morning when Sidham flew through the Lake Lure Gap. But that was all about to change. The Sidham spotted an older couple waving for help, then landed in what's left of their driveway.
Hey, I want you to let me get in. You step out and go out. Help her in. Put her bag in the back. Get her strapped in. I'm going to take her down. Come back. I'll take him. I'll come back and then I'll get you, okay?
I originally left my son co-pilot on the side of the mountain. It was kind of unstable, so I didn't want to put more weight in the helicopter to lift back off. So I left my son with the other victim, and I was just going to take one person down at the time. And you could hear me in the video talking through with the victims and with my son what we were going to do.
3 minutes away, Sidham spotted a group of rescuers just down the river. He landed and found someone in charge.
Told him my background experience, law enforcement, firefighting, pilot, he immediately started helping with coordination. He gave me radio frequencies to coordinate with them on, set up a landing area for me to come back with the other victim. And in the middle of the whole conversation and them blocking the road off, I was greeted by the, at that time I didn't know, but Lake Lure fire chief or assistant chief maybe, and he shut down the whole operation. So at that point, there was, I felt like the conversation wasn't going any further. And again, he asked me to leave, and I said, hey, I have no problem getting out of your area. If that's what you want us to do, we'll leave, no issue. At that point, I asked him, you know, what was the reason I had to leave them there? And he said, again, you're interfering with my operation. I just need you to get out of the area. I said, sir, I don't know where you were trained at, but I know how my training is, and I'm not going to leave personnel behind. I'm going back to get my co-pilot. He said, if you turn around and go back up the mountain, you're going to be arrested. I said, well, sir, I'm going back to get my co-pilot. I don't know what to tell you. And he said, I'm letting you know. And at that point, he waved for two law enforcement officers to come over and told me that again, if I go back up the mountain, I would be arrested.
He flew the three-minute trip back, picked up his son, and left the woman's husband behind.
Sure, he was flooded with emotions and trying to rescue other people, and I just felt that it was best at the time to leave. So I did follow his instructions, and I had a conversation with the female victim before I left, apologizing and explaining. She was standing there. She heard the whole conversation. And they were both very, very surprised, very upset. The husband, as I was leaving off of the side of the mountain, at that point, separated from his wife, he was upset. I can only imagine.
Sidham and his nearly 1,400 flight hours turned his chopper around and headed back to South Carolina, passing people waving for help along the way.
As I was actually leaving to go back to get my son, the original chief or captain that I spoke to, his crew and himself, they came back over and said, hey man, we can't tell you to go get the victim. We can't even ask you to go get the victim, but we can tell you if you come back with the victim, we'll have you a designated landing spot, and they won't, we'll make sure they don't come over here.
So there was no flight restriction when you went in?
No flight restriction when I went in. It went in place 20 or 30 minutes after the confrontation with Mr.
You feel like that was coincidental, or do you think that that was because of what happened?
I don't think it can be coincidental when there has not been one in place the day before doing rescue operations, the night of, the morning of, that took place after our altercation. I think there would have never been a TFR put in place had we not had that conversation. If I had to do it over again, I would have stopped and I would have rescued as many people until they decided they were going to arrest me.
Well, for now, we've chosen not to name that Lake Lure fire official because communications in and out of that town are still difficult. We want to include his side in this story, and if and when he responds to our messages, we will include that. The good news is I saw a video of a Coast Guard helicopter landing in Lake Lure this morning, so hopefully some of those mountain rescues are underway today. From Pageland, Jody Barr, Queen City News.
We have had the technology to create, control, and steer hurricanes for decades.
Project Cirrus is the first official attempt to modify a hurricane. It was run by General Electric with the support of the U.S. military. The official theory was that by changing the temperature outside the eyewall of a hurricane, which they did by seeding the clouds with various compounds such as silver iodide, a decrease in strong winds will result. On October 13, 1947, Project Cirrus targeted a hurricane heading out to sea. Approximately 180 pounds of dry ice was dropped into the clouds. The crew then reported a pronounced modification of the cloud deck, and the hurricane abruptly changed direction and made landfall near Savannah, Georgia. The public blamed the government. Irving Langmuir, who pioneered General Electric's atmospheric research department and admitted that the project was about learning how to weaponize the weather, also claimed the reversal of the hurricane had been caused by Project Cirrus, but the government denied it for 12 years. After a short delay, the project officially continued, and in 1965, Project Storm Fury had targeted Hurricane Betsy for seeding. On that day, the storm immediately changed direction and made landfall in southern Florida. Congress blamed it on Project Storm Fury, but the government claimed that the hurricane shifted before they ever had a chance to seed it. And after 2 months of congressional hearings, the project was allowed to continue. In 1997, U.S. Defense Secretary William Cohen admitted we have the technology to control the weather, including earthquakes and volcanoes. The U.S. government has placed gag orders on employees of the National Weather Service. In October of 2012, after Hurricane Sandy weakened to a tropical storm, microwave imagery shows a thick red beam immediately followed by Sandy growing into a Category 1 hurricane and taking an unexplained left turn into New Jersey. The push towards alternative energy demands more lithium, and according to the U.S. Geological Survey, the United States has over 6 million tons of identified lithium resources. The majority of this lithium has been identified in Kings Mountain, North Carolina. Kings Mountain is believed to have one of the largest resources in the world, but the biggest problem is that people live there and they don't want their quiet towns turned into lithium mines.
People in Schererville have been pushing against a proposed lithium mine for the last several years, but everyone we spoke with here said it's too divisive of an issue to share their opinion on camera. Schererville is a small, quiet town.
I think that's good that we keep it small.
So quiet, many don't feel comfortable speaking out against Piedmont Lithium's proposed mining operation nearby.
I think we're a silent majority. I think a lot of people are afraid to say anything about it because they are bringing a lot to the town as far as money.
Last year, the Department of Defense entered a $90 million agreement with Albemarle Corporation to increase domestic production of lithium for the nation's battery supply chain, specifically from Kings Mountain, North Carolina, starting by 2025. This is the same area experiencing what is being described as biblical floods. While the federal government spends billions on foreign wars and illegal immigrants, they simply cannot be bothered with the health and well-being of the American people, especially those living on coveted mineral-rich land. Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese.
Now, this new data set, as they're calling it, brings the total number of people impacted to 218,000 instead of the 98,000 we first reported. These people were mistakenly marked as having provided documentary proof of citizenship. And Arizona voter registration database now has correctly flagged the impacted individuals. Election officials say they will contact the affected Arizonans with information regarding their status after the general election. That means for now, the Arizona Supreme Court's ruling is going to stay that impacted voters, that includes all of them, will still be able to vote.
He is being treated not just as a former president, but almost as though he is a sitting president. As Boris, you just noted, getting a briefing from FEMA, getting a briefing from the National Guard. That is not something that is typically just offered to a candidate. They are treating him as though he is a former president who is there to help. And one thing that I had noticed earlier during our 1 p.m. conversation was that Donald Trump did not have that much to offer in terms of resources since he is not a sitting president. But I will note that he and the the campaign say that they have arrived in that area with trucks full of supplies that they plan on giving out. So there is something there for them to offer. He also said that he had a tanker truck full of gasoline, which obviously, if you've ever covered one of these storms, you understand that one of the first things and hardest things to come by is gasoline. So he said that he was going to be giving that out. He is clearly taking this seriously as a politician is on the ground trying to show that he is there in support of the people on the ground in Georgia.
But he said, number one, nothing memorable. There's nothing clippable in what he said. They were just all smooth, bland lies. He got outdone by Tim Walz, who may be awkward. It took him a while to get warmed up, but he won the debate because he actually had substance. He was relatable, and he didn't go in there to slay J.D. Vance. He went in there to show himself, and he showed himself to be bipartisan. He showed himself to be reasonable.
Practical.
He showed himself to be practical. He acted as a governor. And a lot of people are complaining that he didn't knock J.D. Vance out and that he wasn't rhetorically cruel. But that was not his job. It was obvious that his job was to sell Kamala Harris as president. He did that very well. He won the debate.
I wrote a cordial debate between these two men. I wouldn't describe them as evenly matched because they are so different. So different in style and so different on substance. Very interested to hear from the spin room, to hear from all of my colleagues here, to get to all of the analysis that we're going to get to. I think the big picture takeaway from this is that one of these candidates is much slicker than the other, is a much more practiced kind of professional debate style speaker, and the other candidate won. There was one bad moment for Tim Walz in this debate where he got mixed up and embarrassed in answering a question about exactly what month he had been in China in relation to the Tiananmen Square protest. But then on guns, on January 6th, on Obamacare, on the economy, on blaming everything on the border, back again on healthcare, on abortion, on every issue on substance, J.D. Vance was very polished and very slick, and Tim Walz beat him on all the substantive points. At least that was my take on it.
I was prepared to fight for that. I believe the value of these publications was such that it is okay to have that fight, and that we would prevail because we had understood what was legally possible. My naivete was believing in the law. When push comes to shove, laws are just pieces of paper, and they can be reinterpreted for political expediency. They are the rules made by the ruling class, more broadly. And if those rules don't suit what it wants to do, it reinterprets them or, hopefully, changes them, which is clearer. In the case of the United States, we angered one of the constituent powers of the United States, the intelligence sector, the security state, the secrecy state. It was powerful enough to push for a reinterpretation of the U.S. Constitution. The U.S. First Amendment seems pretty black and white to me. It's very short. It says that Congress shall make no law restricting speech or the press. However, that was the U.S. Constitution, those precedents relating to it, were just reinterpreted away. And yes, perhaps ultimately, if it got into the Supreme Court of the United States, and I was still alive in that system, I might have won, depending on what the makeup was of the U.S. Supreme Court. But in the meantime, I had lost 14 years on the house arrest, embassy, siege, and maximum security prison. So I think this is an important lesson, that when a major power faction wants to reinterpret the law, it can push to have the element of the state, in this case the US Department of Justice, do that. And it doesn't care too much about what is legal. That's something for a much later day. In the meantime, the deterrent effect that it seeks, the retributive actions that it seeks, have had their effect.
So I worry about it from that perspective, that he may successfully appeal and once again delay or deny justice. But of course, we all have to be concerned with that period of time between the election and when the joint session of Congress meets, because if it's a close election, and maybe even if it isn't a close election, Trump now has even more reason to contest the results, not because of any problem in the election system, but because he fears he's going to go to jail. If he's not in a position to make these prosecutions go away, he may be going to jail. And that means, I think for him, any limits are off. He will use whatever device, lie, cheat, employ violence or encourage it. So we do have to be concerned with that prospect. The best thing that we can all do, because there's no clear legal remedy with this reactionary partisan Supreme Court, is make sure the election result is not close, that we turn every eligible voter out, and that Kamala Harris has a commanding win.
Let me ask you, I don't know if you've heard, there's a debate tomorrow night, and you and Kamala Harris, the vice
president. Society is dominated by left-wing ideas. Ideas of what constitutes a citizen and of what life is about. These ideas originate from the Jews. We hear these ideas parroted by our politicians. We see them in all forms of our culture. We see them acted out before our very eyes. And you know what? It's terrible. It's alienating. It's making our people deeply unhappy. And it's difficult to rectify this situation because many of our people don't even know it's these ideas that are causing so much misery. It's all they've known.
How many NPCs are roaming around us all the time? You know, like, think about how many people are aware of things. And I've started to realize that there's all these NPCs who've been downloaded into this realm, and that's kind of what we're around a lot of the times. Like, all the times, you're, like, roaming around and you're like, meet somebody, you ask them a couple questions, go, oh my gosh, an NPC. Non-playable character is what it is. When you think of the movie Truman Show, he's sitting there and he's talking to his wife and she starts like selling him an ad and he's like, who are you talking to? So when you're talking to NPCs, it's kind of what it is. You say something like, oh my gosh, they're bombarding our skies, and they're like, man, it's kind of cloudy today. And you're like, wait, what? But they're bombarding our skies, they're changing the weather. And they're like, what do you mean? It's supposed to be a cloudy overcast. That's what the weatherman said. I was watching Channel 7 News and they told me it was going to be cloudy. And then you go, NPC. The NPC is put in your path to drain your energy. Because when you go to have your conversation about whatever topic it may be, it just doesn't click. That's because they're an NPC. So they're draining your essence the entire time. You're better off sitting by yourself. You're better off sitting by yourself and meditating. They're just going to steal your essence. And everything is an energetic exchange. So if we allow that and we consent to that, that person will take away your essence. It's kind of just like sucking you all up.
Hey!
Hey, thank you. We're going to raise the juice. We have a quick time.
Wait.
Get your stuff. If not, it's going to get worse and worse for you guys, and it's not pretty.
I'm going to see if I can make it
through. Let me explain something to you. These people today don't know what a strike is.
Right.
When my men hit the streets from Maine to Texas, every single port will lock down. You know what's going to happen? I'll tell you. First week, be all over the news every night, boom, boom. Second week, guys who sell cars can't sell cars because the cars ain't coming in off the ships. They get laid off. Third week, malls start closing down. They can't get the goods from China. They can't sell clothes. They can't do this. Everything in the United States comes on a ship. They go out of business. Construction workers get laid off because the materials aren't coming in. The steel's not coming in. The lumber's not coming in. They lose their job. Everybody's hating the longshoremen now because now they realize how important our jobs are. Now I have the president screaming at me, I'm putting a Taft Hartley on you. Go ahead. Taft Hartley means I have to go back to work for 90 days. That's a cooling off period. Do you think when I go back for 90 days, those men are going to go to work on that pier? It's going to cost the money, the company's money, to pay their salaries. Well, they went from 30 moves an hour maybe to 8. They're going to be like this. Who's going to win here in the long run? You're better off sitting down and let's get a contract and let's move on with this world. And in today's world, I'll cripple you. I will cripple you. And you have no idea what that means. Nobody does.
Over the weekend, the
Secretary of Labor, Julie Sue, has been terrific. She's knocking down doors. She's trying to stop this. She's trying to get us to a media where we can have a fair negotiations. It's the companies that don't want to. They don't want to sit here and be fair. So that's why we're out here fighting for our livelihood.
What more from the automation do you want? What more protections could there be?
What more?
Yeah, they have language in there now.
Not strong enough, because what happens is they come in with new technology. We just caught them in Mobile, Alabama, called AutoGate. Right. And that means the trucks are coming in and they're already checked in somewhere else and not using the checkers in the ILA.
Circumventing the contract.
Circumventing the contract, they don't care. They don't care. It's not fair. And if we don't put our foot down now, they would like to run over us, and we're not going to allow that.
You are going to grind the economy to a halt here on the East Coast and the Gulf Coast.
No, not us. They are. Don't spin it now, because you're Fox News. They're going to drive it.
But are you worried?
They're going to drive it.
Are you worried that this strike...
They have the capital to settle this thing.
Are you worried that this strike is going to hurt the everyday American, the farmers that need to reach the export market? They're telling me that they're going
to
hurt
them. Now
all
you start to realize who the longshoremen are, right?
Nobody cares.
People never gave a about us until now, when they finally realized that the chain is being broke now. Cars won't come in. Food won't come in. Clothing won't come in. You know how many people depend on our jobs? Half the world. And it's time for them and time for Washington to put so much pressure on them to take care of us, because we took care of them and we're here 135 years and brought them where they are today, and they don't want to share.
He revealed the CIA's vast production of malware and viruses, its subversion of supply chains, its subversion of antivirus software, cars, smart TVs, and iPhones. CIA Director Pompeo launched a campaign of retribution. It is now a matter of public record that under Pompeo's explicit direction, the CIA drew up plans to kidnap and to assassinate me within the Ecuadorian embassy in London and authorized going after my European colleagues, subjecting us to theft, hacking attacks, and the planting of false information. My wife and my infant son were also targeted. A CIA asset was permanently assigned to track my wife, and instructions were given to obtain DNA from my six-month-old son's nappy. This is the testimony of more than 30 current and former US intelligence officials speaking to the US press, which has been additionally corroborated by records seized in a prosecution brought against some of the CIA agents involved. The CIA's targeting of myself, my family, and my associates through aggressive extrajudicial and extraterritorial means provides a rare insight into how powerful intelligence organizations engage in transnational repression. Such repressions are not unique. What is unique is that we know so much about this one due to numerous whistleblowers and to judicial investigations in Spain.
Governor Walz, you said you were in Hong Kong during the deadly Tiananmen Square protests in the spring of 1989. But Minnesota Public Radio and other media outlets are reporting that you actually didn't travel to Asia until August of that year. Can you explain that discrepancy?
Yeah, well, and to the folks out there who didn't get at the top of this, look, I grew up in small rural Nebraska, town of 400, town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on, and I'm proud of that service. I joined the National Guard at 17, worked on family farms, and then I used the GI Bill to become a teacher, passionate about it, a young teacher. My first year out, I got the opportunity in the summer of 89 to travel to China. 35 years ago, be able to do that. I came back home and then started a program to take young people there. We would take basketball teams, we would take baseball teams, we would take dancers, and we would go back and forth to China. The issue for that was to try and learn. Now look, my community knows who I am. They saw where I was at. Look, I will be the first to tell you, I have poured my heart into my community. I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect. And I'm a knucklehead at times, but it's always been about that. Those same people elected me to Congress for 12 years. And in Congress, I was one of the most bipartisan people, working on things like farm bills that we got done, working on veterans benefits. And then the people of Minnesota were able to elect me to governor twice. So look, my commitment has been from the beginning to make sure that I'm there for the people, to make sure that I get this right. I will say more than anything, many times I will talk a lot, I will get caught up in the rhetoric, but being there, the impact it made, the difference it made in my life, I learned a lot about China. I hear the critiques of this. I would make the case that Donald Trump should have come on one of those trips with us. I guarantee you he wouldn't be praising Xi Jinping about COVID, and I guarantee you he wouldn't start a trade war that he ends up losing. So this is about trying to understand the world. It's about trying to do the best you can for your community, and then it's putting yourself out there and letting your folks understand what it is. My commitment, whether it be through teaching, which I was good at, or whether it was being a good soldier, or was being a good member of Congress, those are the things that I think are the values that people care about.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
Just, all I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protests, went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance. Thank you.
I have a message for the people of Lebanon. Israel's war is not with you. It's with Hezbollah. For too long, Hezbollah has been using you as human shields. It placed rockets in your living rooms and missiles in your garage.
Hezbollah stores strategic weapons there in civilian buildings and uses the population as a human shield and knowingly puts it at risk.
Hamas continues to abuse hospitals as their terror strongholds, using the most vulnerable as human shields.
As you can see, this tunnel was hidden in a child's bedroom, a place where a child should be safe, and not used as a human shield for Hamas. This is exactly what Hamas does. They hide behind civilian population, putting them at risk.
I was also told that it was a U.S. intel view that among the targets were Israeli airfields, but also, and this is crucial, the headquarters of Mossad, the International Intelligence Service of Israel, which is inside Tel Aviv. It's in the northern part of Tel Aviv, but it's in the city. It's in a densely populated area. And of course, the concern is if you're firing, even though Iran might consider that a military target, it is in a densely populated city.
The truth is, you wouldn't have Hamas and you wouldn't have a problem if there was no occupation. The taproot of the problem here is what the Israelis are doing to the Palestinians. Again, the Israelis are creating a greater Israel, which includes the West Bank and Gaza. Mm. And in the process of creating that greater Israel, they have built an apartheid state. And you should expect the Palestinians who live in that apartheid state to resist mightily. And that's exactly what's happening. And unless there's some self-determination for the Palestinians, you're going to have more and more uprisings in the future. You want to remember what happened on October 7th was not the first instance of the Palestinians rising up. There was the first intifada in the late 1980s, there was the second intifada in 2000, and there'll be more intifadas, more October 7ths in the future, in large part because how the Israelis treat the Palestinians.
The Israeli military unfortunately implemented the Hannibal Directive on October 7th. And that, just so viewers are aware, is when Israel, initially developed in Lebanon while trying to suppress the Lebanese population and stop them from battling the Israeli occupation. And it's whereby Israel takes measures to kill the captives who are Israeli that have been taken by the other side. Now, that happened on October 7th, and it's since been proven in three different cases. It happened, unfortunately, after...
It's been denied by Israel, to be clear.
It hasn't, though. It's been denied by certain upper echelons of the Israeli political establishment, but there have been key figures within the Air Force that have acknowledged that this has taken place. It's also been revealed by the Al Jazeera investigation, and other places, too, have gone very deep into...
But what about the 1,200 people who they murdered and the 7,000 they wounded?
No. Hundreds of those people were killed when Israel implemented the Hannibal Directive.
That's simply not true.
It simply is true.
It isn't.
And I encourage you, in the spirit of journalistic inquiry and curiosity, to really look that up.
It's already been thoroughly investigated.
It absolutely has not
but
been.
But it has, Loki.
It's been investigated by Al Jazeera. It's been investigated by trustable news sources that have found this to be the case.
No, it's not true that hundreds of people in those named casualty numbers on the Israeli side
were killed by Israel. No, it's a fact. It's a documented fact. And you know what else? If you were to study those cars which were put forth as evidence that Hamas had killed those people fleeing the Nova Festival, the order came directly from the Israeli Air Force. This is a mass Hannibal. This is a dead zone.
Why are you trying to diminish the scale of what was going on?
I've just said that happened. That doesn't equate to diminishing what you've just
stated. It
doesn't
say hundreds
of
hundreds.
You're diminishing Apache helicopters bombing cars that contained civilians. You're diminishing all of the Israeli captives that have been killed by Israeli airstrikes. Israeli captives have come out of Gaza and said very clearly that actually they were scared of being killed by Israeli airstrikes.
Why are they?
What you've actually seen in this case is a massive increase of Palestinian prisoners who are being tortured. There's been examples of rape within Israeli military camps. The rapists have come out and become celebrities within Israeli society. 68% of the Israeli population say they oppose the prosecuting of people that have been implicated in rape within the dungeon system. And if you really look at it, Israel has far more chance of returning hostages by negotiating for their release than by airstriking them. But what Israel has done as part of this campaign is airstrike and kill its own captives. It is within the interests of everybody, especially those who identify as Israelis currently, to end Zionism. Zionism has dispossessed and disempowered and killed people on an industrial scale. Its maintenance requires four generations of Palestinian refugees scattered throughout the Middle East, the highest population of refugees there is in the world.
So I believe all Palestinian people should have exactly the same rights as you and I and every Israeli.
And that requires the end of Zionism, so therefore you support the end of Zionism.
Well, I don't agree with what has clearly been a form of occupation, okay? But putting that to one side, I also don't agree with Hamas, Hezbollah and the Houthis, funded by Iran, armed by Iran, launching wave after wave after years and decades of terror attacks on Israel.
Do they have air forces and air defenses? There is a complete difference between one of the most powerful armies in the world, which has literally a key unit within the Israeli military, Unit 9900, is the visual unit which uses satellites in the sky that can pick off a bit of chewing gum on your shoe, okay? You're talking about actors that are shooting rockets which do not have precise targeting against one of the most powerful air forces in the world.
It sounds
F-16s and F-35s. You're talking about asymmetrical warfare. But you know, the thing that Israel doesn't remember, and which Israel has to know and must know, that winning a war is not about killing on an industrial scale the weakest among the population you are targeting, which Israel excels at, which is the essence of Zionism. Winning a war is about the largest amount of people being convinced of your viewpoint. If we use that metric to understand this war, Israel has lost in Gaza and it will lose in Lebanon because Israel has more enemies around the world than ever before. More people are critical of Zionism than ever before. More people understand it to be essentially an anti-life ideology, which is causing mass human suffering. The Likud platform, which is its charter, states very clearly, there will be no Palestinian sovereignty between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea. The Likud charter calls for the complete obliteration of Palestine and all of the rights of Palestinians. That is the core of the issue. One group that you're talking about don't have air defenses and do not have an air force.
As you know, are internationally isolated. And yet they were
the
somehow...
The other one
and yet
has the support of the United States, fine. Which has over around 1,000 military bases around the world. Fine. And, of course, all of the largesse from literally the US, after Israel has taken its terrorist actions, which the former head of the CIA, Leon Panetta, called it a form of terrorism in Lebanon with the pager attack. Right after that, the US has said it's going to give $8.7 billion in military aid to Israel.
Was what Hamas did on October the 7th an act of terrorism, then?
I would say that the killing by the Israeli Air Force of Israeli citizens was an act of terror. I would say that Palestinians who have lived in camps for several generations, they're not in our shoes. They're not living the kind of lives that we live in the places
that we live. But we haven't answered my question.
But I'm answering your question. To a Palestinian who has suffered their entire life under the boot of Israeli occupation, what you view as justified will not be what they view as justified.
No, I'll ask you what
the
you
very
think.
Same way,
I'll ask you what you
the
think.
Very same way that you denounce figures and define them depending to these particular legislatory definitions. Throughout history, the very same people...
I understand.
You compared yourself to Nelson Mandela.
I understand.
The ANC were absolutely treated in exactly the same way.
And the British government called them terrorists.
The FLN were treated in exactly the same way. The Vietnamese were treated in exactly the same way.
Okay.
I'm speaking directly to your point.
You're not, though.
In fact,
you're not
William
answering my
Cuffey,
question.
William Cuffey of the Chartists, these were people that mobilized for hundreds of years
to
get the right
like
to vote, to get the right to vote, that didn't own property and were not landed gentry in this country.
Hear you.
Do you know what happened to them? They were imprisoned as terrorists.
Okay.
They were massacred at the Manchester.
I know the same.
If an Apache helicopter shoots at a car, what happens to the car?
Have you?
Do you think? Do you think Hamas? Let me ask you a question. Do you think that the use of AK-47s would cause the damage that was done to those cars fleeing the Manchester?
I think that because
it wouldn't. Let me ask you a question. Do you believe in the provisions of the Genocide Convention?
I do not believe what Israel's doing is waging genocide.
That's not why
I'm asking.
Do you know why? It's not what I'm asking you. What I'm asking you is Article 1 of the Convention on the Prevention and the Punishment of Genocide says that all parties that are part of this are under obligation to prevent the occurrence of genocide and punish those responsible for its commission. There is
how many
a
people
sound
live in
argument.
How many
there
people
is a
live
sound
in Gaza?
Argument.
How many people live in Gaza?
2 million people live in Gaza.
How many have been killed?
Well, I mean, the Lancet Medical Journal has put forth the assertion that 200,000 people's lives have been ended by Israel's operation.
Well, it's completely untrue.
But that's the Lancet Medical
it's
Journal.
The
so the Lancet Medical Journal is a more trustworthy source than you. Was genocide committed on the Aboriginal people of Australia?
Well, I'm not going to go over the whole thing.
They still exist,
genocide.
So therefore your argument is that they were not subject to genocide following the arrival of Captain Cook. They are resistance groups, as the vast majority of the humanity is represented by governments that define them as resistance factions, including the government of Switzerland.
I mean, I watched this BBC documentary, which had all the footage from the music festival. And honestly, Loki, it was one of the most sickening 2 hours of my entire life.
Have you been on social media for the past year?
Yes, I have.
You have seen a constant stream of mutilated children. You have
seen
a constant stream of people being lifted up out
which
of
you're very
the rubble.
Keen, which you're
how,
very,
how can you how you, can you even bring into the conversation 2 hours of footage in comparison to 12 months and 77 years of this type of treatment?
Do you condemn what Hamas did?
You've already asked me that.
Not directly, you haven't answered.
I will not condemn people based on Israeli military talking points.
Okay, good.
But I have a question for you.
You don't condemn mass murder.
I have a question for you.
You don't condemn mass murder.
Obviously, I condemn mass murder.
But you won't condemn it by Hamas.
You're talking about a specific political context in which the information is not
clear. No, I'm talking about
clear.
Mass murder of people on October the 7th.
By the Israeli military.
You see, it's just absurd.
So I have a question for you.
I think you lose all credibility when you say that.
I have a question for you. I'm not concerned about whether you think or don't think
you
I have credibility. It's
so I don't cover this from supporting either over the other.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Absolutely.
Because I have
sure.
a question. I have a question.
What's your question?
Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah.
News Corp International.
Yeah.
Which employed you for several years.
Yes.
Which actually.
It employs me
is
now.
Still, it employs you now.
Yeah.
Okay, we're getting to the issue.
Yes.
Now.
What News do you think the issue is?
News,
I saw what you tweeted. What does it have to do with me?
Not my tweets. I have a question for you.
Mm.
News Corp International had a charitable arm which funded the Jerusalem Foundation, which builds illegal
What's
settlements.
What's it got to do with me?
Illegal settlements in
What's it got to
Jerusalem.
Do with me?
Do you condemn Rupert Murdoch?
What's it got to do with me?
Do you condemn Rupert Murdoch?
I'm not talking about Rupert Murdoch.
Do you condemn Rupert Murdoch?
I'm not talking this about
here,
Rupert Murdoch.
This has never been shown on British media. This is a letter from Netanyahu's political office. And Bridget may well recognise the handwriting of Benjamin Netanyahu
okay.
here. It is a list of individuals that Netanyahu considered to be funders of his political campaign. There is a name on this list. The name is Rupert Murdoch. Your employer.
You know what, Loki?
It seems he funded Benjamin Netanyahu.
You know
That's
what?
An issue.
You know what, Loki? It's not an issue for me.
It's an issue,
Nobody
and actually it's in the
no.
interest of objectivity
one thing.
That you state it. I view myself as loyal to the people of the camps, to the people under the bombs. I do not view myself as loyal to somebody that would end up on a list of potential funders of Benjamin Netanyahu.
I like Rupert Murdoch enormously. I respect him enormously. And if you,
and you won't condemn his funding
problem,
of murder of
if you
Netanyahu,
have,
you won't condemn his funding
mate,
of Netanyahu.
You don't condemn mass murder.
You don't condemn mass murder.
Oh, I do.
Condemn the Israeli military for mass murder of Israeli captives.
Had you bothered to watch this program for the last year, you would see I've regularly
no,
condemned
it's,
them.
It's not condemnation.
Truth and Reconciliation Day. Is it me, or is this day all about hating white people and Canadian history? When this day rolls around, I think of Jagmeet Singh and other politicians wearing orange shirts, collectively shitting on white Canadians in our history. Am I wrong? If today was really about treating Indigenous people better, maybe we talk about the Indian Act, where some Indigenous communities don't even have access to clean drinking water and they are hopelessly dependent still on the Canadian government. Instead, today we glorify Indigenous victimhood, pump the nation up with grievance porn, and really, what's the goal? Personally, I think it's to guilt trip white Canadians and shame anyone who dares to be proud of Canadian history. Ironically, fresh off the boat, East Indians will jump on this bandwagon to shame Canadians here for being colonizers. Well, quite frankly, if you look around, I think it's us being colonized right now. But anyway, Truth and Reconciliation Day. We know what truth means, but did you know reconciliation means the restoration of friendly relations? How on earth does telling a completely one-sided interpretation of history that demonizes white Canadians as a whole help build friendly relations? And not resentment. Because this day, I think, normalizes that resentment and hatred towards white Canadians and everything to do with our European and Christian history. If Canadian institutions really wanted to treat Indigenous people better, or wanted to improve relations among all Canadians with real truth and real reconciliation, why would they be obsessed with silencing all opposition to the oversimplified narrative that Canadian history is purely genocidal? Even Indigenous people who have different interpretations of this history or give sympathy to anything white or Christian get sidelined by journalists or smeared by the hate experts. A recent True North podcast about residential schools was censored from Spotify because it was reported for harmful content. A Canadian Antifa-aligned journalist celebrated this, and an NDP member of parliament called this censorship good journalism. Teachers in Canada have been fired for simply pointing out simple truths that poke holes in this narrative, like some of these Indigenous kids in Kamloops died of tuberculosis. But nope, no fact-checking allowed. You're canceled. A Global News article from a year ago suggested that even questioning this narrative is violence, and we've seen the Cancel Canada Day campaigns on July 1st, and the Canadian news media will amplify activists who claim celebrating Canada Day is the same thing as celebrating mass graves. Even the good old RCMP echoes this sentiment that stating true stories that oppose the prevailing genocide narrative can be dangerous. You see, Canada, if you don't agree with this oversimplified version of Canadian history, which implies white people are genocidal maniacs, then you'll get branded a residential school denialist. In fact, last week, a new law, C-413, would make residential school denialism a crime. It's clear that this is another attack on our right to free speech, even our right to think freely about our own history. So, what are we going to do about this? I started an initiative, SaveFreeSpeech.ca, the main goal to stop Bill C-63, an Orwellian bill that would be the end of free speech in Canada. But since doing more research on the language around this bill, there is a very clear pattern emerging here. You know DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion initiatives? Well, Bill C-63 uses a lot of the same language, and it implies that hate speech and hate crimes only really applies to specific identifiable groups, like ethnic minorities. Now, trying to legislate hatred, a human emotion, is a clear violation of our rights that only a tyrant would suggest, but let's talk about some trends of hatred in Canada. For example, back in the day in Canadian history, the Iroquois people genocided Mohicans and other native groups. Now, is it popular in 2024 to shit on Iroquois people for being genocidal? No. Whereas it's very popular to shit on white people for being genocidal. Another popular trend is burning churches to the ground. Over 100 churches have burnt to the ground over the past couple years across the country. Another popular trend is tearing down statues of Canadian icons of history, like Sir John A. Macdonald or Sir Egerton Ryerson.
Witnessing the moment the statue of Egerton Ryerson was pulled from its perch.
Antifa terrorists through force and Canadian city workers through the stroke of a pen seem to be in agreement that Sir John A. Macdonald, the white guy who started Canada, he's just a racist. Same with the whole history of this place. And have we really seen many pundits or politicians condemn these actions, disgracing our history and targeting Christian communities? I haven't. So it needs to be asked, is this form of hatred acceptable in Canada? Well, the government-funded Canadian Anti-Hate Network admits that they completely ignore this form of hatred.
We are very proudly anti-fascist and we focus on the far right. If you speak with anybody who is a researcher of this or an expert in national security threats, they will agree that ideologically motivated violent extremists and threats primarily today are coming out of far right organizing.
And wouldn't you know it, the Canadian Anti-Hate Network are some of the people behind Bill C-63. Canada, this campaign to stop hate is popping up everywhere. Bill C-63 is all about further criminalizing various forms of hate speech. Millions in funding was announced last week for the Canada Community Security Program, which is all about combating hate speech and hate crimes. And last week, the United Nations tabled a global digital compact that seeks to combat misinformation and hate speech online. But folks, and especially white Canadians, or anyone who feels at all patriotic about this place, do you think this legislation is going to be used to protect white people from being hated? To protect Christians from being hated, based on everything I just told you? Well, when it comes to Bill C-63, groups concerned about Islamophobia support this bill, groups concerned about anti-Semitism support this bill, but no one is mentioning the obvious trend of hatred towards icons of Canadian patriotism, conservative-leaning Canadians, and Christians. In fact, unfortunately, the Conservative Party, in the debate pushing back against Bill C-63, they basically agree that hate speech laws are only going to be used to protect ethnic minorities. The Conservative Party.
We already have laws that clearly govern hate speech in this country. The government should focus on enforcing existing laws and protecting ethnic minority groups by empowering the RCMP to work collaboratively and quickly with local police forces and share intelligence to protect vulnerable communities. Directing CSIS to implement threat reduction measures and communicate threats to ethnic minority groups.
So this idea that we're gonna stop hate, or that Bill C-63 would be used to protect also white people from hate speech, don't count on it. Much more likely, any proud patriotic Canadian, white or otherwise, who dares criticize mass migration, say the wrong thing about an ethnic minority, or challenges the official genocide narrative of history, will get you branded as the hateful one. You will be the first to get charged and prosecuted by these new proposed laws. But that's okay. Truth and Reconciliation Day supports this idea that Canadians who think like you, well, you deserve it. You're far right. You're a racist, you're a white supremacist, peddling hate and misinformation. You see, all this language has been built up from years of propaganda. And that's why I started SaveFreeSpeech.ca, to fight back against this onslaught of propaganda and this campaign to silence, censor, and dehumanize Canadians who have the wrong opinion. Because folks, if we don't stop Bill C-63, next it's going to be fines, life imprisonment, or house arrest. I hope the Conservative Party sees the light and starts to push back against this clear, creeping far-left tyranny that's also anti-white. But they're constantly terrified to be called names by the mainstream media, so I don't really see how they can help. We can't afford to wait till next year's election to push back on this issue. We need to be brave and bold now, Pierre Poilievre. But I am happy to see the People's Party of Canada pushing back against this. They've been opposing the cult of multiculturalism and mass migration since 2018. You see, more hate speech laws and censorship will guarantee more conflict and division in Canada for everyone. No one wins here. So in the spirit of actual truth and actual reconciliation, let's start to oppose the corrupt bureaucrats, the fake news, and the DEI-obsessed institutions in this country. So I urge you to go to SaveFreeSpeech.ca to learn all about Bill C-63, follow us on social media, and if you really want to help us make a stand against this far-left tyranny, then support our documentary. You can go to givesango.com/SaveFreeSpeech. We expose the Antifa-aligned journalists and academics infecting our institutions and who are hell-bent on taking away your freedom of speech. Thank you for watching, and thank you for your support.
Nation is an extended phenotype of race. The people of a racially homogeneous nation can afford the luxury of identifying themselves by patriotic national pride. The people of a multiracially fractured squatter zone cannot. They will be forced by tribalistic antagonisms and competing racial interests to identify by more primal signifiers, and those who remain committed to a deracinated higher order of national identity will eventually succumb to the undertow of ethnocentric aggrandizement and either sink into a malaise or expend huge mental and emotional energy acting tribally but thinking globally to assuage their cognitive dissonance and unresolved feelings of unease. Nothing will gel an implicit and explicit white identity faster than multiracial encirclement. If you value the concept of an American identity and think a white identity is gauche, then you'll support staunching the decline of the white population share of America and renewing the white majority so that it sits comfortably and securely at 80% or more of the total American population. You will support closing the borders to perpetual dirt world colonization and deporting the invaders who have set up shop here at the behest of the uniparty global homoists who live and breathe for cheap votes and cheaper labor. It's past time we stopped pussyfooting around about this issue. Existential threats to a nation deserve existential truths in defiance. But presently, you simply sit at your office desk and ponder this, with a dead stare, peering deeply into an LED screen for an answer you already know.
Beginning with the family and ranging through all of the concepts of honor and loyalty, Volk und Vaterland, culture and economy, all the way to the eternal foundation of our morality and our faith. Nothing has been spared by this negating, all-destroying dogma. 14 years of Marxism have ruined Germany. 1 year of Bolshevism would destroy Germany. The richest and most beautiful cultural areas of the world today would be transformed into chaos and a heap of ruins. Even the suffering of the last decade and a half could not be compared to the misery of a Europe in whose heart the red flag of destruction had been hoisted. May the thousands of wounded, the innumerable dead, which this war has already cost Germany, serve as storm clouds warning against the coming tempest. In these hours, when we were overcome by a powerful anxiety as to the existence and the future of the German nation, the aged leader of the World War appealed to us men in the national parties and leagues to fight under him once more, as we had at the front. This time, at home, in unity and loyalty for the salvation of the Reich. The venerable Reich President has allied himself with us in this noble sense, and therefore we shall vow to God, our conscience, and our folk as national leaders, that we may resolutely and steadfastly fulfill the task thus conferred upon us as the national government. The inheritance we have taken on is a terrible one. The task which we must accomplish is the most difficult ever posed to German statesmen within the memory of mankind. But our confidence is unbounded, for we believe in our folk and in its imperishable virtues. Peasants, workers, and bourgeoisie must all join together to provide the building blocks for the new Reich. The national government will therefore regard it as its first and foremost duty to re-establish the unity of spirit and will of our folk. It will preserve and defend the foundations upon which the power of our nation rests. It will extend its strong protecting hand over Christianity as the basis of our entire morality, and the family as the germ cell of the body of our folk and state. It will reawaken in our folk, beyond the borders of rank and class, its sense of national and political unity and its resultant duties. It will establish reverence for our great past and pride in our old traditions as the basis for the education of our German youth. Thus, it will declare a merciless war against spiritual, political, and cultural nihilism.
So clean the house, clear the drawers, mop the floors, stand tall like no one's ever been here before or at all. Don't you mention all the inches that are scraped on the door frame. We all know you tiptoed up to 401 back in the way.